Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture, especially the parts that we blow up, because it's the 4th of July and the 5th and the 7th and the 19th. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Yes, it is the 5th of July as we record this, and we're, let's see, that makes it week four of home fireworks.
I have to say, it has not felt like it was as bad this year.
No.
It was quieter.
Yes. It's been quiet uptown. The reference for later. So, yes, this year, it's been quieter in our neighborhood, although based on what I've been seeing in the Facebook group for our town, it has not been. The other parts of our town have had more fireworks than we have.
But we haven't really been hearing them.
Right. Because they're on the other side of town.
Okay.
One thing I've noticed is that there are more people, more pro-fireworks kind of jerky people on the Facebook group. Like, anytime someone complains, like, you know, the fireworks is making my dog crazy or waking my kids, you get, like, people, oh, poor you, boom booms make you scared. You know, your dog or your kid can sleep in tomorrow. It's no big deal. Whatever. Get over it. Move to Zimbabwe. Well, some guy was like. And one lady's like, my husband's a veteran. He's curled up in a fetal position in the other room. And then we're like making fun. Like, seriously, people? It seems like there's more of that this year. I don't know what that's about. It's very strange. People could have more compassion for others. I think part of it is just the overall stress of everything.
Maybe.
Making people cranky.
People jerky?
Yeah, jerkies. But the other thing is in Massachusetts, and I think we've mentioned this several times, fireworks are illegal. Like the home fireworks, like professional fireworks, like you can have it. But no one had any professional fireworks this year, obviously. There were no big displays. And in New Hampshire, fireworks are legal. And so they spend all their time selling it to people from Massachusetts, driving up to buy them.
Yes, one of my New Hampshire friends said she saw lots of Massachusetts plates, more than usual, at her local fireworks sellers.
It's been in all the news lately, just how everywhere, especially in the city of Boston, the illegal fireworks have been driving people nuts. Like, it has been. I mean, for us, we haven't noticed it, but around here, it's been crazy. Like, how much worse it is. And people are trying to figure out, like, why is it worse this year? People are bored. They're in the lockdown. They can't go out to fireworks. They have disposable income because they can't go on vacation. And they're spending it on fireworks. And, you know, there are all kinds of reasons that they're offering. But one of the interesting things is, like, last night, so on the 4th, it sounded like a war zone out there.
It was pretty incredible. Unfortunately, none of it seemed to be in our neighborhood, and so poor Ben just wanted to see some fireworks, and I took him out for a walk at like 9:30 at night, and there was nothing. I mean, we could hear them all around, but everything was too far away to see, like below the trees, where we could kind of occasionally see little flashes.
Right. Yeah, the people down the street who usually have a party and then shoot off big fireworks, they obviously didn't have a party this year. They weren't doing it, so that's too bad.
But we finally did, like, one of the neighbors behind us shot off some fireworks that they could see sort of through the trees at about 10 o'clock, and then after that, the kids were satisfied and went to bed.
Yeah.
They were a little bit tired this morning.
Little Roman candles. I mean, they weren't even that big.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. It was colorful, and it flashed, and they
boom.
Were happy.
Yeah.
It went boom.
And crackle, really.
Crackle.
Snap, yeah,
crackle, pop.
But the funny thing is, and you know, listeners, you can chime in, you can send us feedback on this one. But everyone, all of my friends on social media from all over the country were saying how crazy the home fireworks was, whether places where it's both legal or illegal. Like, they've never seen anything like it. In fact, I saw aerial footage from Boston last night. The news had that the city, like all over the city was fireworks everywhere. It was crazy. Like, so many fireworks that there's no way the police could have gone and enforced the fireworks ordinances anywhere. It was just
right.
Out of control. So that was fireworks of the 4th. One of these years, we're going to actually take the kids to an actual professional fireworks.
One of these years.
Demonstration. The problem is we've always going to my brother's for 4th of July. And that's just always been the thing. On the 4th of July, we go to his house for the big pool party. Which right. Almost, as we said last week, we almost didn't do. We weren't going to do. And we didn't actually go to a pool party, but we did end up at his house on the 4th.
At the pool.
So what happened was my brother's best friend's daughter, Scooter, that's her nickname. What is her actual name? Is it Mary Beth? Or is that the other daughter?
I think Mary Beth is the other daughter. I cannot remember.
She's just Scooter.
Oh, my goodness. She's Scooter, right?
poor kid. I mean, you know, she's in her mid-20s. I mean, she's not really a kid. But, you know, all I know her is a Scooter. She's always been Scooter. Anyway, she's got married yesterday on the 4th of July. And originally, because of the COVID thing, they weren't going to have a big ceremony. And it was just going to be small friends, you know, family, not even friends, just family, immediate family there. And then because of the changes in the quarantine lockdown stuff, they were able to expand that. And so my brother and his wife and their kids wanted to go. My mom wasn't, who lives with my brother, wasn't going to go. So they needed someone to come and spend the day with mom. So my mom's in her mid-80s, and she's having health issues that she needs just someone to be with her most days. So they wanted me to, you know, see if we could come over and stay with her and just hang out with her, which I'm happy to do. See my mom, and especially these days with the COVID thing, we haven't been seeing her as much. So so we said sure. So we went over, and after the farmer's market, we went over and we were there for a long time,
from like
12:30 to
noon to 8, really.
It was a long day. It means we were there even longer than we normally go for one of the parties.
That's true.
We usually head out around 6:30, 7. But we stayed till 8. I brought some burgers over and grilled them on his, burgers and dogs, grilled them on his grill and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we brought snacks and drinks.
Yeah, it was fun. The kids
spent the day in the pool.
Well, the
kids spent the day in the pool.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the pool for a while, but the kids never get the pool to themselves, like that John's pool.
Right.
Even when we were there before, it was Evie's kids were there, or my sister Evie, or even my, their cousins would be there. But right. They had the pool to themselves on the 4th of July.
Just the five of them.
Yeah.
All day. It was pretty much like,
I mean, when my brother has a party on the 4th, there's usually like 100 to 150 people.
Right. I mean, they were sad about some of the things that weren't going on. I mean, they liked having the pool to themselves. They missed the Jello eating contest. At one point, they were I overheard them narrating like all of the things that would normally be going on right around now.
Yes. Yes.
Now we'd usually be having the Jello eating contest, and we'd be reading the Declaration of Independence. Yep. And
then the praying of the rosary. That's the tradition, is right. Every year there's a Jello eating contest, there's a reading of the Declaration of Independence, there's at the end of the day there's the bonfire with the praying of the rosary. So all those traditions. I don't, maybe they did it today, like, so they were going to have some people over today, this afternoon, a small group, not a big, obviously you can't be doing a big party, but they were going to have like just a small group of the close friends, including the folks that they were at the wedding with yesterday, there. So that, I wonder, they probably did that then, but it was the first 4th of July, I think, since we were married, where, or at least since we moved near to, closer to my
right,
brother's.
Since we moved to the South Shore.
Yeah, that we didn't have that big 4th of July party there. But it was a nice day. It was good to spend with my mom. It was nice, and I think she enjoyed it too.
Yeah, it worked out really nicely.
Yeah. We did end the day watching a lot of episodes of Hometown on HGTV.
Yeah.
My mom loves watching HGTV. That's just her thing. That's like, she sits down and she has it on in the background, even when she's not even watching TV, that or the Food Network. But so she wanted to go inside, and so we were inside, and she watched a lot of episodes of that.
Yeah,
it was like they were having a marathon or something on the 4th, and so it's like a knockoff of Fixer Upper, right? Is the best I could say of it. Yeah, it was all right. It's a formula. Nothing.
The kids kind of liked looking at the houses and.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's because I like looking at home renovation stuff. You know, there's a Facebook page that I follow called "For the Love of Old Houses" that shows like these amazing houses for like old houses that are for sale, and you see all the real estate pictures, and sometimes you see these amazing places and stuff. I have a thing for looking at houses. I don't know why, but they've kind of picked it up for me, I think.
Yeah.
And so I do enjoy. I enjoy seeing like good renovations, but man, after a while, the formula of these shows just kind of gets to you, gets in your
it
head.
It does. Yeah.
So yeah, that was good. It was good. It was a good 4th. I think we got home. It was a late night. The kids were pretty tired. They were pretty tired this morning. But that was good. We'll talk a little bit more about today, the 5th, and Sunday when we talk about our Catholic stuff at the end. We've kind of settled on, we talk about Catholic things at the end of the show.
Yeah, I guess you've settled on that.
I kind of settled on that. I don't know why. I just did. I think talking about faith is a good way to wrap things up.
I suppose so.
Yeah. Anyway, but before we get to that, let's talk about what we've been eating or cooking.
Okay.
So one of the things we made was you made your pulled pork in the Instant Pot.
I did.
Quickly go over how you did that again.
Oh, goodness. See if I can remember. I basically pulled out a big chunk of frozen meat.
So it's big pork shoulder, just whole frozen.
Bone in.
Bone in. Just shove it in the Instant Pot.
I did do a...
You browned it.
No, I did not brown it.
Oh, okay, you didn't brown it.
I did put some spices on it. It was like, you know, some chili powder and cumin and brown sugar, onion powder and garlic powder, that sort of stuff.
Right. But you don't have to defrost it.
No, you don't have to defrost it. I mean, I defrosted it just enough to like cut it into a couple chunks because otherwise it doesn't fit in the Instant Pot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, I didn't brown it. And this time I added most of it. This is my secret. Most of a can of pineapple chunks. I think next time I might use crushed pineapple instead. I think that would be better. But juice and chunks. I left a little bit out so that Lucy and Anthony could
juice,
have.
Not syrup. Pineapple chunks and juice, not syrup.
Right. It's I buy the cans of pineapple in its own juice.
Yeah. Because it would be too sweet otherwise.
Right. Well, I did add some of the cola syrup to it.
Oh, right. So one of the things we have is cola syrup, which it's basically like it's Coca-Cola syrup without the carbonated water.
Right.
Which, funny enough, funny story is how we ended up getting that. We must have talked
about this. Yeah, we've talked about this before.
It was, I had an old boss who gave it to us as a cough remedy, which we never used it for that, but we decided.
Is it cough remedy or stomach upset?
Stomach remedy. It was a stomach upset remedy, yeah, for the kids. And we never did that. And so we ended up having this bottle sitting around and we tried it because we've heard of recipes that use Coke in like a ham. There's a ham recipe that uses Coke and some other.
And I thought, well, if you can use Coke, then you can use cola syrup because really it's
what it's about. Because once you boil off the water, that's what you got.
Cola
syrup and pineapple.
So yeah, you cook it for like, I don't know, like 2 hours in the Instant Pot, get it nice and soft. Oh, I think I added some sliced onions and garlic too.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and then once it comes out of the Instant Pot, you pull the meat out and you shred it into a big, it's like bigger than a 9x13. I don't know what it is.
A roasting pan.
Roasting pan.
Yeah, it's a roasting pan.
Big old roasting pan. And I shred it all up with a little bit of the juice from that I cooked it in. And then I put it under the broiler.
Yes.
For like 10 minutes and then stir and add some of the liquid and then another 10 minutes and then stir and add some liquid and then another 10 minutes.
The reserve liquid from
right.
the...
And while it's cooking in the oven, I turn the Instant Pot on to saute and boil down the liquid so it like concentrate the flavor.
So basically a syrup at the end.
Right. And then I pour that on the meat at the very end. It's like super thick and goopy and sweet. And
it's really good.
And the meat gets these like nice brown crackling like
bark. It's almost like it's like bark from when you smoke something on the smoker. You know, it's got that crunch to it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's so crunchy and so porky and so
good.
You
pile it on some rolls, and yeah, it was really good. Pork and pineapple are perfect together. They really go together.
Right, they do. And I served it with some coleslaw.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put the coleslaw on the bun with the pulled pork because I love that coleslaw crunch mm-hmm. with the meat. It's perfect.
So I wanted to try something. I like barbecue sauce. I've started trying to experiment with making barbecue sauce. So I made the traditional ketchup based barbecue sauce with the ribs. With last time we made ribs, but I wanted to try a Carolina style barbecue sauce this time. And so Cook's Country, which is part of Cook's Illustrated, had a article a few months ago that had a couple different Carolina sauces, like Eastern and Western, or Lexington style and Eastern style, or I don't know, something. One is spicy and tangy, and one is spicy and sweet, I think it is. And so I kind of tend to like tangier better, more than sweeter. So I tried this one, the Lexington style barbecue sauce, and it's cider vinegar, a cup of cider vinegar. I cut their recipe in half because it made a ridiculous amount of barbecue sauce. But a cup of cider vinegar, half a cup of ketchup, a teaspoon of granulated garlic, a teaspoon of pepper, 3/4 teaspoons of kosher salt, and a half a teaspoon of red pepper flakes. That's it. Bring it to a boil over medium heat and let it reduce for 5 minutes. And that's it. Let it cool. And it's really good. And it gets better the next day. Like, if you can put it in the fridge and let it sit, it's really good. And on the pulled pork, it was really awesome. It gave it a nice tang. Oh, yeah.
I confess I didn't even try the barbecue sauce.
Oh, yes. Well, you'll have to try it. It's good. It's really good.
I will try it. I was not really wanting some super saucy. I wanted to experience the full glory of the pineapple pork.
Yeah, I did taste the pulled pork with the pineapple before putting the barbecue sauce on too. So I do appreciate it. I might actually put some of this barbecue sauce on the pork chops I cook tonight.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah. So that was one thing we made. And then we also made we had chicken thighs.
Right.
That you picked up. And you made an interesting sort of rub, like wet rub marinade for it. It was lime juice, lime zest.
Right.
Honey.
Yeah.
Cumin, chili powder, garlic powder, and onion powder.
Right. I feel like there's something missing.
This is what I wrote down when you told me what you'd done.
So,
but the key ingredient in that really was the honey, the sweetness of the honey.
Yeah. The lime really wants something sweet to counterbalance the acid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really good. Like on the grill.
This summer, I feel like I'm all about the marinades with like citrus that are like sweet citrus, like lemon mm-hmm. and brown sugar or honey and lime. I did some chicken, just like really quick chicken breasts in the oven that had like lemon juice and garlic and brown sugar. And that came out awesome, too.
You might like this recipe I'm planning for the skirt steak that you bought. That it's a cilantro lime skirt steak recipe grilled that includes fish sauce. It might be interesting. We'll talk about. We don't have to decide what we're going to do now. I got a bunch of different skirt steak related grilling recipes. We'll pick which one we're going to do this week. But
I have to say, I'm kind of alarmed and shocked at how expensive skirt steak is.
Yes, it has become expensive because it's become trendy.
Right. I mean, like,
because there were a lot of articles and recipes about how using the cheaper cuts of meat, like skirt steak.
Right. So now it's like $15 a pound.
Well, there's only so many skirt steaks on a cow.
Right. Right. So I buy skirt steak when it goes on sale.
Yeah. And they had a bunch of them on. You bought like all of them that were on cheap.
Right.
Sale.
Right. They had like the manager special where they're like big yellow label and they're, mm-hmm. you know, you must sell now before it goes bad. Yeah. I bought a whole bunch of those.
Apparently, there's two kinds of skirt steak. There's the inside skirt steak and the outside skirt steak.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is more tender than the other. I'm going to guess the stuff that was on sale was the not as tender, which is fine.
Well, no, it's because it's the normal, like, like, it's the normal, what the stuff that they have at the more expensive rate. It's just, like, the older that they haven't sold yet.
Maybe. Well, yeah. I guess the big difference you can tell is whether they're wider or thinner or whatever. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I use one or the other. It's fine. But, yeah, expensive skirt steak. Well, anyway, we kind of got off of the chicken thighs, but...
Oh, right.
The thighs were good. They were bone-in, skin-on, and I grilled them with the skin on, which I think protects them from drying out as much and burning.
Yeah, I made sure to put the rub, like, under the skin,
yes,
as well as on top. I mean, it kind of got on, sloshed on top of the skin, but I mostly put it under the skin and on the backside that doesn't have the skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and trim the fat off.
So it didn't smoke. I've made that mistake in the past.
Yeah, when you... There's a learning curve for cooking chicken on the grill, especially chicken with the skin on, because if you cook it too much over the fire and it drips on it, it creates awful smoke and you just get all like burned grease smoke taste.
Yeah, it doesn't taste good.
It's not as good. So the key is you have a charcoal or gas. Half of it's hot. The other half has, you know, coals and no coals or burner and no burner. And so you put it skin side down over the hot part, the fire part, just quickly to kind of toast it and then flip it a little more and then move it to the non-fire part and let it bake basically or roast in there like that. That's the key because then otherwise you get horrible smoke. Yes, that was really good. That was really good. And another grilled thing we made was grilled ratatouille.
Okay, that was really good because I love ratatouille. And it's like, you know, eggplant, zucchini.
All the summer veggies.
Bell pepper and tomatoes. And it's the season for those. But what I don't love about ratatouille is the...
Fiddly.
Well, it's... A, it's fiddly. And B, it involves the oven being on for a long period of time.
Right.
Because the way I think ratatouille is really best when you cook the eggplant and the zucchini first, and then you cook them, like you cook them, roast them individually with just oil, and then you cut them up and you put them, or you layer them in the pan with the onions and the peppers, and then you put it back into the oven to roast so that the flavors meld. But that means you've got the oven on
twice as long.
And so it heats up the house.
Right. So what I had was this recipe where you take red onion, make big slices, put them on skewers. You take the eggplant, you make big thick rounds, zucchini, you make planks, bell pepper, you make planks of big thick things. You have the tomatoes and you scoop out the seeds and then you cover them in, you know, olive oil and salt and pepper. And then you put them on the grill and you grill them. And they take different amounts of time. So there is a bit of fiddliness with, you know, it takes longer to grill onion and eggplant than it does peppers and tomatoes. So you got to be kind of moving things on and off. And so it was a bit fiddly. But once you've got them grilled, then you take them off and you can chop them up into bite-sized pieces. And you put them...
Now, see, what I did not like about this recipe is it didn't have nearly enough tomato.
Right.
And, but also it doesn't really make a sauce. Like, it wanted you to put, like, raw garlic and herbs and just sort of, like, a marinade on top of it. And that's not ratatouille. That's just, like roast grilled vegetables with marinade.
Right.
So I solved the not enough tomato problem because we had some leftover marinara sauce that you'd made.
Yes.
Like a week or two ago.
We'd boiled it down, concentrated into a pizza sauce. So
right.
It was really thick.
So it was really thick. And so I chopped up all the vegetables after you'd grilled them and I tossed them with some, with the marinara sauce and some basil and some other herbs, herb de Provence and Aleppo pepper, because I like it a little bit spicy. And then I put it into the oven under the broiler, just not for very long. Like I broiled it for like maybe 5-10 minutes and then turned it off and just let it kind of sit in the oven while it was still hot for a while. And then I pulled it out and I put some more fresh basil on top.
Yeah. And it was really
that
good.
That was really good.
It was really good at that dinner. But it's really good after a day or so.
It's even better.
It gets even better. It's really. We just had some tonight, like leftovers, and it was so good.
I do think that I don't like it quite as much as my standard ratatouille.
Right. But of course, you don't have to have the oven on.
But I also didn't have to have the oven on. So
it's good in the winter.
Right.
When you if you can get the summery vegetables.
If you can find eggplant in the wintertime.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the fall. It's a really good.
It's a nice fall dish.
Yeah,
it is.
In September around here, you can still get days that are cooler, you know, so that turning on the oven doesn't seem as much of a ugh. But you can still get the summer vegetables.
Right. Yes. I mean, that's sort of a New England thing, is in Texas, September is not a cool month.
No, it's still hot as Hades.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
So that's what we've been cooking. It was a good week for cooking and grilling. It sounds like we were able to grill every night. We actually, there was like 4 days of rain we got where we couldn't grill.
Well, the pulled pork was a non-grill night.
Right, because, yeah.
So was the chicken breasts I made in the oven.
Right, which we didn't talk about. Yeah.
I mentioned.
Okay. So, yeah, there was a couple of nights where we had to cook inside. My philosophy is grill every night you can, because our grilling season is short enough as it is. So
it's tricky, though, when you buy planning to grill every night and then you have a week of rain.
Yeah. That's New England.
You got to balance it.
So, all right. So let's move on to what we've been reading or watching. We haven't really nothing big to watch lately, right? There was nothing really groundbreaking or that everybody that we know watched this weekend.
Right.
Like Hamilton on Disney Plus.
It came out on Friday.
Yes.
And we watched it on Friday.
Just like everybody was seeing illegal fireworks everywhere. Everybody was watching Hamilton, it seemed like, this weekend.
It's been fun to see my non-Hamilton fan friends, yes. Like, suddenly, like, well, you know, I usually don't jump on the bandwagon, and I don't really, this rap, this does not...
I don't like hip-hop, I don't like rap.
Yeah, this is not my thing, but everyone's talking about it, so I guess I'll watch it, and then, like...
I've watched it 3 times in the past 2 days.
Right? I have seen a few people.
Well, there are a few people who still
don't like it.
Grumps. Your friend Richard still is grumping about.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah,
it's just Richard. It's fine. This like for every good thing, there's someone who doesn't like it,
and that's
just the way it is.
Yeah,
it's just the way it is.
You don't have to love it.
I have things that I don't like that everybody else seems to like. That's fine. That's whatever. You bought the soundtrack. You were super huge into the soundtrack 4 years ago when it first came out.
Right. I am not a latecomer to it. I am not a musical theater person at all. I am not.
Well, that's the irony is I love musical theater. Right.
I am not the person who listened to Les Mis and Cats nonstop. In fact, I really don't like musical theater, which is why it's so weird that I became such a Hamilton fan.
Yeah.
The thing is, I have friends who live in New York City and who saw it on Broadway, like when it first, I think,
Or even before.
I think I actually had a friend who saw it off Broadway.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
And so you've got to listen to this and talking about it nonstop on her Facebook page and sharing like
nonstop,
right? Sharing clips from it. Yes. And she was so excited when it went to Broadway and everything. And so I started listening to it fairly early on, like before it.
Yeah.
Everyone.
I think I first started thinking about listening to it was I think I saw a segment from like 60 Minutes or one of those shows where it showed the recording of the soundtrack and them talking about it. I think that was the one that got me interested in, because, you know, hearing some of the music and seeing the people talk about it, you know, seeing Lin-Manuel talking about it, got me interested in finding out more.
It wasn't me listening to it.
I was kind of like, whatever.
You're a weird thing.
Well, I don't even think you were playing, like, well, you would play it when I was at work. This is when I wasn't working at home.
Well, this is true.
So I don't think I ever heard it all that often here. But then I started hearing you play it here out loud, and so I got into it too. And then was it last year that we went to the?
I think it was last year.
So when it came to Boston, the traveling show, we never got to New York to see it because, you know, we're not that sort of people.
No.
The sort of people who can go to New York and see a play on Broadway. That's not us. It would be nice someday to be able to do that. But that's not us right now. So, but when we heard it was coming to, the traveling show was coming to Boston, they were having a lottery to have the opportunity to buy a ticket, to win a ticket, to buy tickets. I put my name into the lottery to be, you know, among the first in line.
I figured there was no way we were going to see the show in Boston because the way it worked was people who were season ticket holders.
They got the first.
Got one. First dibs.
Yeah.
And I thought there's nothing. There's not going to be anything left.
Right. But they had this lottery. They must have set tickets aside for this lottery. And so, yeah. Because everyone who won the lottery could buy it, was given the chance. And so we were picked in the lottery. And so I bought tickets and we had pretty decent seats. They weren't great seats. I mean, there was kind of a little bit of an angle. It wasn't direct, but we were down on the floor.
We had orchestra seats, but they were obstructed. We were like at the very far right.
Left.
Left.
Stage right. Stage right is when you're standing on the stage and looking out,
yeah.
Correct?
No, we were on the far left. Yeah. I'm just, you know.
There was, so any of the action that happened on the left side of the stage as you look at it was obscured for us.
Right.
Yeah, that was a little hard to see. But, and the thing is we heard the soundtrack a million times. We've seen YouTube bootlegs of the show, which, you know, someone with their phone camera in the balcony, you know, shooting the stuff.
Right.
So we've seen that.
And of course, like the official sort of publicity clips.
Official, yeah, some official clips. But, and then we got to see the traveling show with a different, of course, not the Broadway, the original cast from Broadway, which was good. I mean, we raved about it at the time. We had a blast. We loved it. But this was different. And we watched it Friday afternoon so that the kids could watch it too. We wanted the kids, because they'd heard the soundtrack a million times. They were very familiar with it.
Yeah.
So some people might ask, you let your kids listen to and watch this play that has F-bombs and innuendo and stuff?
Yeah.
So Disney wanted a PG-13 rating, which by the rules meant you had to help. You could only have one F-bomb in it. So they got rid of two.
I mean, I'm not thrilled the language was in the show, but
right.
I think the artistic quality was such that I was willing to overlook it.
Right.
I would have been happy to buy a copy of the album that didn't have the profanity.
Right. Yes, I agree. Like neither of us. And when we would play the album, there are certain songs we would skip. You know, and as far as the innuendo stuff, I think most of it went over their heads.
Yeah.
The older one or two might have seen something was amiss there, but you know, I don't know. I think it went over their heads. Frankly, they enjoyed it despite any of that. But as far the enjoyment of it, I mean, it was. I wasn't sure whether it would be a big deal to watch it on TV.
But I was kind of afraid that, in fact, like, I'm going to watch it and it's going to be anticlimactic and I'm not going to, it's going to be like, oh yeah, that was nice.
Yeah. We saw that in person, but you know, we know all about it.
I mean, I was also curious because I really did want to see the original cast after having listened to the album umpteen bajillion times.
Right.
To see the original cast really did. And I, you know, I had the book and everything. So I really wanted to see it and it did not disappoint.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw so many things watching the recording that I had not noticed before.
So it was recorded during a live performance in front of an audience, but over several days, some of the shots had to have been done during a rehearsal without an audience present because they were like on stage, very close up. Like the camera would have been in the middle of the stage. I think that's very clear. But yeah, seeing the action up close, seeing the staging, like it made a difference. It changed how you experience parts of the show and experience the story. You know, oh, George Washington, you know, when he this is farewell thing, King George is still there, like watching him. You know, he's still King George is on the side, you know, hamming it up, like being part of this, like enjoying everything tearing itself apart, you know, like he says in the song, you know, or. Wow, like you know, Aaron Burr's reaction to the singing of this song, or the fact that during Dear Theodosia, both Burr and Hamilton are doing the same thing, you know, the same actions. Like, all that stuff was really fascinating. Like, it really added to it a texture to it that wasn't there in just listening to it or watching from out in the audience when you're seeing it live.
Right. Even over a live performance, because everyone's so kind of small and far away, whereas right. The camera brings them up closer. You can, like, see the
you
tears.
You see the expressions.
The expressions.
The tears, yes.
The spittle on King George's lip.
Yes, because he's just mad King George.
Right.
One of the things you mentioned was, like, how, even, like, in the second act, it's a story of forgiveness. It's a story partially about the damage of adultery. Like, adultery doesn't get a pass in this. It is a story of how adultery destroys and absolutely harms, kills a marriage in a sense. In one way leads to a death in the family. Actually, two ways, in two instances. Everyone knows that Hamilton dies, right? That's not a spoiler. If you didn't know that, you needed a little more American history background.
Spoilers
for a 200-year-old historical event. So you have the adultery, which you see the clear effects of how bad adultery is for everyone involved. But then you see forgiveness and grace and love. And it's not easy. It's not easy for anyone involved to ask for or to give.
Right. I think that is the most, to me, It's Quiet Uptown is still the most powerful song in the entire show, because it is that moment of absolutely unimaginable reconciliation, forgiveness, and redemption. Of course, it's still a tragedy because he goes on to die.
Right. Because it's never enough.
Right. It's not enough. And yet it's kind of everything, too, because as we see when we see the play on stage, is, as opposed to hearing the album, is that really Eliza Hamilton.
She ends up.
Is at the center of the
literally,
play.
Literally, she's at the center of the play at the end.
And I really think that she is sort of that movement of grace in the play.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the central themes is who lives, who dies, who tells your story. You know, Alexander Hamilton is obsessed with his legacy, obsessed with leaving a mark and you know, attaining earthly glory, you know, immortalized in his actions. And so he seeks, you know, political change and all this other stuff. And when it turns out the person who he's been ignoring all this time, his wife, Eliza, is the one who is his legacy. She spends 50 years after his death creating a legacy for him.
Right.
I mean, she's the one who spearheads the building of the Washington Monument, raises the money for it. She founds an orphanage, a famous orphanage foundation in New York that still exists, making homes for orphan children, the orphans like Hamilton was. I mean, she's the one who did all that. And without Eliza, ironically, there would be no play called Hamilton, because she preserved all right. of this.
In a way, the Hamilton of the title is as much Eliza Hamilton as it is Alexander Hamilton.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's so funny because we've gone on and on, you and I together, about how masterfully constructed this play is, the literary qualities of how it's put together, and like just the casting of it is so perfect, except for Lin-Manuel himself. I mean, he's not the strongest singer, let's say. There are other singers, but because he wrote it, it's more personal for him. It's more
right. I mean, clearly he feels it. I don't think he's bad at all, but I do think that he, like, in such a stellar cast with, like, amazing voices.
Yes,
he's good. He's not great.
Yes. And in fact, we both agree that the Hamilton of the traveling company that we saw, who was the alternate, was really good.
He was really good.
Yeah. He would have been good in the original cast. But to see like Renee Goldsberry or David Diggs or Washington, Chris Jackson, you know, these so perfect. You know, Jonathan Groff as King George was fantastic.
He almost steals the show.
Every time he's on stage. And the ensemble.
He's the kid's favorite.
Yes, he was the kid's favorite. And the ensemble was great.
Right.
I mean, just all of that action in the background, all of the stuff that
I am blown away by the choreography and the lighting, the music. It's all amazing. The costumes, too.
And it's funny because all you saw, all we experienced with the soundtrack was just the singing. And all of this, these other elements were missing until you get to see it. Now, like, obviously, like I said, we saw the stage, you know, the stage version before. But this is, you get a close-up view. I mean, some of the angles, there's angles from the back of the stage. There's angles from above at a couple points, which were, you know, the camera angles, which were great. I mean, just this, from the song Hurricane, where you see Hamilton standing in the middle, and there's, like, the lights are swirling around him, and it's the hurricane, you know, and he's the center of the hurricane. I mean, just this amazing, yeah, it was so good. I mean, we're just kind of raving.
We are raving.
We're on the Hamilton podcast. But we did watch that. That was really good. We'll probably watch it again. And I didn't think I'd want to, but now I do.
Yeah, I wasn't sure I really wanted to, like, I'll watch it, but I'm not sure I'm, you know, going to spend that much more time on it. I spent a lot of time listening to it and reading about it, and I didn't think that I really was going to get much more out of it.
It was very moving. I mean, both of us were at certain points where
I was crying.
Tears.
I was totally crying. Let me tell you, bawling.
So yeah. So two thumbs up for the Hamilton on Disney Plus. I mean, what an opportunity to get it for the $7 a month we're already paying to Disney for Disney Plus, for that to be there.
Disney Plus has got to be the best value
right now. Yeah,
I mean, with all the Marvel movies,
the Star Wars, and then this other,
and now stuff, Hamilton.
Now, right? They're killing it. So I want to talk about a book I just finished.
Okay,
called Beneath a Scarlet Sky. So this book was recommended to me by my brother John, that he had read it. His daughters had read it because his oldest daughter had met the author at her school. He had come to speak at their school. My dad has read it, and he loves it, too. So it's a true story.
Did you say that my sister had also read it and loved it?
I don't remember that. I might have said that, but I don't remember saying that.
Maybe
she did read it. I'll have to ask her. But it's a novelized version, a fictionalized version of a true story. So okay. Just like, you know, like a movie's based on a true story, but it's a true story as told to the author, and then the author created dialogue and scenes and some conflated some characters here and there. But it's basically the actual story of World War II. This Italian boy becoming a man, you know, he's 17, 18 years old as during it. Starts in 1943, ends with the end of the war, who lives in Milan. His father is a fairly wealthy luggage maker, something like that. He makes stuff in the fashion industry. Anyway, he goes through a couple of these different things. I don't want to spoil anything, but he ends up at one point helping Jews escape into Switzerland over the Alps, because he is sent to, when Milan comes under Allied bombardment, his parents sent him and his brother to this camp, Casa Alpina, where this father, this priest, I forget what his name is, this priest is runs this camp for boys that they've been to before, and it's an Alpine camp. And all these boys are there, and so they're sent up there to stay. And it turns out the priest is running an underground railroad for Jews out of Italy into Switzerland.
And the parents don't know that?
They don't know that. So the father, the priest, recruits Pino. His name is Pino Lella. It's short for Giuseppino. His name is Giuseppe. Giuseppino is Little Joe, so they call him Pino for short.
Pino is even shorter.
Yeah, his brother's Mimo, which is short for Domenico. So his brother's name is Domenico.
Oh, like your name.
Exactly. So so the priest recruits him to take these Jews over the mountains, and there's on these very dangerous trails, and they have to not only avoid the Nazis, but they also have to avoid partisans, Italian, like the anti-fascist partisans, because some of them are not really, they're bad people who are just taking advantage. Like, I'm a partisan, you should support me, now give me all your money, you know. It's like, right. Some of them were just criminals taking advantage anyway, or they were charging the, you know, Jews to take them out, like, so they were smuggling them out for money, whereas Pino wasn't, in the, you know, the priest wasn't doing it for money, and right. So they saw them as competition, and so on and so forth. So and it was very dangerous. It was really dangerous. So all this excitement. He ends up meeting this boy, this other young man who lives in the village nearby, who teaches him how to drive, who says, I'm going to be a great race car driver someday. Turns out he does become one of the most famous race car drivers in Europe on the F1 circuit. Yeah. Like he meets all these people and does all these things. He, I don't want to give too much away, but he ends up in a situation where he becomes key to the Allied victory in Italy. But nobody knew this in history. Like, this book exposed this truth that he was the source of some information that brought about the downfall of the Nazis in Italy. And yet, because of the way it happened, nobody knew about it.
He didn't get credit.
He didn't get any credit for it. And he didn't want credit for it because of things that happened. So it's a compelling book. I mean, you get through the first part where, like, the going of the Alps, it's like, wow, this is amazing. This is a whole story. And then you're like, nope, you're not done yet. Get on the ride. And it's just this amazing story. There's a lot of faith aspects in it. There are some elements of... he meets a girl, falls in love, they're at war, things happen, let's just say. So, you know, that's not great, but he meets Cardinal Schuster, the Cardinal of Milan, at one point, and gets to know him pretty well. Cardinal Schuster was beatified by Pope John Paul.
Like, interesting.
He's there when Schuster tries to negotiate with the Nazis their withdrawal to save the people, you know, like... he meets Mussolini several times.
Okay.
He meets the top Nazis in Italy very closely. I'm not going to spoil anything. So, an amazing story. And it's apparently been optioned for a movie starring Tom Holland, which I think would be interesting. He's the kid who played Spider-Man.
Okay.
I would love to see it as a movie. I think it would be amazing. It would be a great movie. So, I'm like, why have I never heard of this? It was crazy, crazy good story. So that's what I read. So what you finished some books this week?
I did. I finished two books this week. Woo!
Good for you.
So I finished the last few chapters of A Little Lower Than the Angels.
You mentioned that.
Which I mentioned last week.
Yep.
And last week I wasn't sure how I was going to like it. And it totally, like, it pulled itself together in the last couple chapters, and I really liked the ending a lot. Cool. So that's, like, two thumbs up. It's kind of gritty for too young a kids, but I would totally give it to, like, the...
14, 15-year-old?
No, like, the 12 and 13-year-old.
12 and 13, okay.
It's not, I mean, it's dark, but it's not that dark.
Okay.
So, and nothing really terrible happened. So it was good. And then I read a science fiction novella that I've heard a couple friends raving about called Binti. And it's the first in a trilogy. So it's about a young woman who it's set in the far, far distant future.
Hundreds of years.
Yes. It's not clear exactly when it's set, but sometime in the distant future. And a young woman named Binti is the first person narrator. She's the first member of the Himba
tribal
group.
They're an African tribe.
African tribe who actually are featured in the movie Babies that we saw.
It's a documentary called Babies that profiles... four families in four different cultures, American, this African tribe that lives fairly primitively right now, Japanese and Mongolian.
Right. So the Himba are known. So they're very dramatic in that they live in a very dry, arid part of Namibia where there's not a lot of water. And so rather than washing with water, the women use a native clay that's mixed with fat and oftentimes with aromatic oils. And so
they clean wash with.
Right. They rub it. But they also it's also a beauty treatment. Like they think that this red skin and red hair is beautiful. So they braid their hair in these elaborate patterns, and then they rub the clay. They like pack the clay onto the hair so that it looks like they have red hair.
Hmm.
In these dramatic braids.
Interesting.
And their skin is red.
Huh.
And so anyway, the main character is the first person in her tribe to leave Earth. And she's been accepted to
an alien
university. Yeah. There's only like 5% of the students are humans at all. And she's the only person in her ethnic group who's ever been invited. And then adventures happen on the way there. They meet aliens who are hostile, and she turns out to have some skills that they need.
I have a certain set of skills.
So she's her gift is that she is a mathematician, but mathematics in this universe seems to be have sort of mystical qualities, like the ability to manipulate the world around you through the power of math. It also seems to be a world where instead of building spacecraft are made from the bodies of creatures that are naturally space going.
Okay. I've heard of that before.
Right. It's kind of a cool, I mean, there are a lot of really fascinating aspects to this story. I don't usually love first person narration.
Mm.
She was a really good, she was a character who I enjoyed spending time with. I'm really looking forward to reading the second and third books in the trilogy.
Interesting. Cool. So, I think I've heard of this one. Binti by Nnedi Okorafor.
Yes.
I'll put the link in the show notes so you don't have to try to figure out how to spell that.
Yeah, the author herself is...
Is she Namibian?
No, she's not. She's African-American, Nigerian-American. So her parents are from Nigeria, but she grew up...
Okorafor sounds like a Nigerian name. Yeah.
She grew up in the U.S. Okay. And she's written quite a few books.
Interesting.
And I believe that Binti won some prizes.
I like the idea of getting some of this science fiction from different cultural perspectives. Like, there's lots of European and American science fiction, obviously, and also Japanese. I've read some from a Japanese perspective. But getting more of the stuff from Africa, I mean, it's just African science fiction. That just this hasn't been a lot of that. I've read some African fantasy, but not science fiction. So that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. Mm. And I would love to read more of the same genre.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Well, I mean, it kind of reminds me a little of Black Panther, like that, where, yes, that perspective of this advanced culture, this advanced nation state in Africa that has, you know, the advanced technology. So I'd love to read a novel set in Wakanda. I'm not a huge comic book reader, but I'd love to read a novel set there. It would be kind of cool. Yeah. So cool. Those are good. So let's finish out by talking our Catholic topic, and we'll talk about Mass. So we had a special Mass today.
Independence Day Mass.
Independence Day weekend. So just as a preface, as a reminder, since the lockdown began in March, we have not all gone to Mass together as a family. Even when we were able to start going again, there's a couple of members of our family who were not able to wear a mask for a whole hour. Just out of two of the kids who could not wear a mask for an hour in church. It was a stress thing. They just, the stress of having to wear a mask was too much.
Right.
So they haven't, we've been switching back and forth with the other three, but they haven't been to Mass, and it was distressing for them both. They really wanted to go.
Yeah. This was not a convenient excuse not to go to Mass. This was I really want to go to Mass, but I just do not think that I can do this.
Yes.
So our parish is part of a three parish collaborative.
Yes.
St. Edith Stein, Our Lady of Lourdes and Christ the King parishes.
Right. It's also got three different cultural groups we've talked about.
Right. So Christ the King is predominantly Haitian, and St. Edith Stein is predominantly Cape Verdean. And so we have three different linguistic groups. We have priests who...
A priest from Haiti, a priest from Cape Verde, and our pastor, who's actually from Nigeria.
Right. So the Nigerian theme, I guess.
Yes. So Father Michael planned an Independence Day weekend mass, not just for American independence, because July 5th is also Independence Day for Cape Verde. So
right. So today was Cape Verdean Independence Day. And so it was a great opportunity to come together as our three communities.
And because I know someone out there is wondering, Haiti's Independence Day is January 1st. So,
yeah.
So, yes, but it was a great
day. Not quite that much synchronicity.
Yeah.
But
it was a great day for to have everybody come together. So he planned a mass in the parking lot of one of the churches, not our parish that we go to,
but our Lady of Lourdes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had us park across the street
at a little strip mall
and then the parking lot of the church was marked off for people to sit.
Properly social distance seating groups.
Right. And they had a stage platform with the altar on it. And
they had the musical, the choirs from the three different...
We had three choirs.
Right. We had English choir, Cape Verdean choir, and Haitian choir.
And we had, five priests?
Yes, because there's our regular three priests. And then Father Irino, who used to be... He was the Cape Verdean priest here before... And had been reassigned to the Vatican.
Yeah, he's been studying in Rome.
Yeah, he came back for this somehow. I'm not sure how he did that. I hope he can get back. But he was here for this, which is I was great because I loved Father Irino. His homilies were always good when you could hear them. He didn't always give a homily. Sometimes he let the deacon do it, or he often did. Wasn't it Father Irino who almost always let the deacon? Or was it the other one?
I think it might have been. Father, no, I don't know.
I've lost track now because we've had
quite a few different priests come through because we are a missionary parish.
Yeah,
we have a lot of missionary priests coming through,
right?
Which
and
is
they
kind
often
of...
are, they're often here because they're also going to Boston College for their graduate degrees and that sort of thing too. So
right, I mean it's kind of cool because we get to expose to priests from all over the place, and a lot of them are really awesome.
Yes, so yeah, we had five priests, two deacons.
And
a partridge in a pear tree. No.
And four languages.
So we had Portuguese Creole, the Cape Verdean. We had French Creole, Haitian. And we had British Creole, American.
Ha ha.
I was waiting to the joke. And Latin.
The
Gloria.
Gloria was in Latin.
In Latin. But we had all the readings were divided up. We had into the different languages.
We, and had, then we hymns had, in the different languages.
And then we had three homilies. Now,
the other two priests gave fairly short homilies.
Yes, Father Michael gave his customary. Well, for Father Michael, I'm sure as a Nigerian priest, I've heard stories that was a short homily. Like Nigerian priests tend to give, from what I hear, a homily of an hour is not unheard of in Nigeria. So,
and he's a great preacher. I love his homilies are always just really.
So
profound.
And speaking of his homily, so today the weather all week had been saying we're going to get thunderstorms today in our area, and he's like, I've been praying, and even this morning I'm looking at the forecast going, it's going to be thunderstorms. Like the mass starts at 11, they say thunderstorms afternoon. We may have to bail on this at some point. Or
I said we are. It's
going
to
go.
We're going to go.
You said we're definitely. So we get there, and it's a little cloudy still, but it's warm. It's 70s. It's not too hot yet. In the parking lot, it got kind of warm. I mean, it was uncomfortably warm there, and it was 80 by the time we ended. The sun was beating down on us. It was hot. It was hot, and it was a 2-hour mass. But Father Michael's the sound system kept cutting in and out, and he's already got a strong accent, so it was hard to hear everything. But one of the things he was talking about was by being outside. People say when you pray outside, there is nothing between you and God. Now, obviously, when you receive the Eucharist, there's nothing between you and God there. But he's making the point of there's nothing between us and God when we are praying here right now with him. And so we pray to God, and he's just so very, energetic about it. So very passionate about it.
Passionate.
Yeah. I mean, it was so good. So
I didn't actually get to hear most of the mass because again, we have anxiety issues. So getting our anxious children
out of the van.
Into the car. Well, no, getting them into the car.
Oh, that was tricky.
Was actually a huge, the huge accomplishment of the day. They both got dressed in church clothes and got to the car and made it to the church.
I tell you, 5 minutes before we left the driveway, I didn't think that they were going anywhere. They were still in their pajamas. That was miraculous.
It took a lot of work. I was praying to their guardian angels last night and this morning. I was just saying, please let them get, I know they want to go. Please help them.
And that's the thing, is they wanted to go. They just, they couldn't get past the anxiety.
So they made it, but getting out of the car was a bridge too far.
Yes.
So I spent the parking, the mass across the street in the parking lot.
In the other parking lot.
Like, it wasn't that far.
Yeah. You were actually probably as close to him as we were, but you were behind.
But I was behind the altar and you were on the side of the altar.
So the sound was all going away from you.
The sound was going away from me. I could hear lots of it.
They really should. I don't know why they didn't have the altar like up, backed up against the back wall of the church, facing the parking lot. You would have had a lot more space.
Yeah,
it was kind of a weird arrangement.
The logistics were kind of odd.
Yeah. Anyway, so you were across the street with the two in the van. At one point, though,
I got one of them
to come
for out for communion.
Well, yeah, a little before that.
A little bit before that.
Brought them over to me where I was with the others, but you stayed there. And then another one had to go back.
And another child got
overheated.
Overheated, needed to go to sit in the car.
Yeah, poor thing.
But he and I did go back across the street and received communion at communion time. And
gosh, they were so grateful. Just the one who hasn't received communion. Please pray for her. Sorry. I think we're trying to shield their anonymity, but please, pray for the child who is having trouble getting to communion because they really want to go.
So much.
But the anxiety is a burden. I mean, I have a hard time wearing a mask for an hour in the heat. I mean, I kept taking mine off so I could breathe. It was hard.
Right. I mean, I understand why masks are a huge debate right now, because a lot of people do have anxiety issues, medical issues, and it's tough. I personally think that there's a really good
reason to wear
them for health and safety, and as a way of loving our neighbor. But I understand if people can't do it, you can't do it.
Right. And there, at least in Massachusetts, there is a medical exception. If you can't wear the mask for medical reasons, and I think that includes mental health reasons,
you don't have to provide any kind of proof or explanation.
You don't have a doctor's note or anything. You just say, I have a medical reason not to wear a mask. And that's supposed to be enough. And even in the very few cases where someone got thrown out of a store or something, that's been publicized and corporate has come and re-educated and retrained
what are we, Chinese?
So all that said, I'm glad we were all there. It was
so beautiful. I wish I could have heard more of the mass. I would have loved to hear more of the Cape Verdean and the Haitian.
Mm-hmm.
I know enough French and Italian and Latin that I can follow, especially if it's written, I can follow the gist of it. And even spoken, I can pick out a lot.
For me, especially the French.
During the quarantine, when we were, everything was being live streamed and we couldn't go to mass, our Cape Verdean mass was being live streamed on our Facebook page. And I watched not a whole mass, but I watched parts of the Stations of the Cross, parts of the mass, parts of the Rosary in Cape Verdean. And I'm like, this is a beautiful language. And I really enjoyed being exposed to that. Ever since we started going there, I've sort of said, I'm going to make it to a Cape Verdean mass one of these days. And I just never have actually done it. And so now I'm like,
Man, we would stand up.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is I would love to experience it. And yet at the same time, I know that
because it's just very different. The way that it's celebrated, it's culturally very different. So we would have to be figuring out what we're doing, and we would not know any of the language. So it would be, And we, you know, being there, people would probably be like, hi, welcome. Do you know what's going on? You know?
Right. I've been to Mass in languages that I don't know. When I was in Belgium, I went to Mass in Flemish.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I've been to Mass in Italian and French.
What's the beauty of the Mass? I mean, frankly, the beauty of the Latin Mass was that you didn't have to know the local language to be right. fully participant. But even without that, the Catholic Mass is the Mass.
The Mass is the Mass.
And so if you're there, you could pretty much figure out where you are and which prayers are being said and which part of the Mass you're at.
Right.
And so that works. That works fine.
And I love being able to worship together as our full community mm-hmm. with all of the different language groups together as one body. That's so beautiful.
Remember we used to do that at Immaculate Conception in Salem.
Right.
Which had a Haitian community.
Dominican
community, right.
Sorry. Spanish?
I meant to say Dominican and the Haitian came out. Yes.
Yeah, so there we often had bilingual masses, both in English and Spanish.
Especially for holy days, yeah.
Like almost all, like the Easter and Christmas and things were all bilingual. And that was really lovely, too, because we're worshiping together. We're not separate.
Yes.
We're one body in Christ, all of us together.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I
get weepy.
I used to advocate to Father Murphy that maybe we should just do it in the Novus Ordo, in Latin. You know, it doesn't have to be the old Mass. You can do the new Mass in Latin. That's perfectly valid. That's the normative language. I used to advocate for it, and he'd like, yeah. Not that yeah. Like, he's like, I'm not sure everyone would go for that. He's like, I'd be fine. I'd have to remember how to pronounce all of it because it's been, you know, 40 years since I was in seminary learning that. But I'm not sure we'll see is the often thing. So we all know what we'll see means, right?
Yes.
Means no. Anyway, because as a parent, you learn that we'll see means go away for now. I don't want to say no. So, but it was a beautiful Mass and it was nice. They were going to have a picnic, like have everyone would bring your lunch and picnic in the parking lot afterward. And I'm like, nah,
I don't think anybody.
We're stopping at Dunkin' Donuts on the way home and getting culottes.
I don't know if anyone actually did. And I've kind of felt sad that it was a nice idea.
It's just too hot. It's the middle of summer.
Hot. It was too hot.
4th of July weekend. Yeah.
And after like a day spent doing 4th of July yesterday, like packing.
Oh, the kids were already wiped.
The kids were wiped and packing like a whole nother lunch. We already packed lunch yesterday.
Right.
To
go to my brother's.
Right. Yeah. So.
And as I've said before, packing a lunch for us is tricky because of Lucy's allergies. It means we have, it's a whole extra set of concerns with packing things. So it was just, we could do it. We could have done it, but we just, all things considered, it wasn't something that we could swing.
Yeah. But I didn't see very many people staying. I saw it looked like almost everyone was going.
Yeah.
There might have been a few people.
Everyone was really hot.
Yeah.
But hopefully they'll do another like Mass on the lawn at our parish, which they've done before.
Right. 2 years ago, we did a beautiful Mass on the lawn for
which I couldn't go to,
our feast day of St. Edith Stein.
Yeah. I think I was recording that day. I was working. It was a Monday.
It was a Sunday. It was the regular Sunday Mass.
I wasn't there for whatever reason.
I don't remember why you weren't there.
Anyway, but yes, so that. But I would love to be able to do that, another Mass on the lawn. Someday we'll all be able to do regular ones, like the regular, just everyone be together and have food together and all the stuff that we used to be able to do.
Yeah, that would be nice.
It would be nice. All right. Well, we've been going on and on, so we should wrap it up.
Okay.
But first, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Thistledown John.
Thistledown John. That is
the name.
That's a great name.
He gave us, assume by the name Thistledown John, it's a he, but you never know. Michael F., Justin D., Michael P., and John T. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. I want to give a plug. Go subscribe to American Catholic History, or another podcast on the network, at sqpn.com/history. Especially now around the 4th of July weekend, there's a lot of great stories. Nearly 60 stories so far about Catholic history in this country.
It is a great podcast.
People
Our
you've
kids
heard of,
love it.
Many people you've never heard of. And the one that has come out this week about Father Vincent Capodanno well worth your time. Well worth your time. All right. So that's it from us. So what did you think of our discussion today? If you have anything feedback you want to give us, you can comment at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And like I said, I'll put all the links to the books that we mentioned in our show notes at sqpn.com. If you could, we'd really greatly appreciate it if you would go and write a review of the podcast at Apple Podcasts. We haven't had a review there in several months, and we would love to get some. They help us get the show out to more people. So if you write a review, we would greatly appreciate it. And if you would share the podcast with your friends, help us grow our community of listeners and reach more folks. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.